the previous program was Axe Politics with Ben Max, heard Fridays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for the evening edition of Democracy Now!, followed by Real World with Mike Sargent. Stay tuned. It's 6 p.m.
Democracy Now! As we continue to mark the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, we look at a new documentary about the father of Julian Assange and his fight to free his son. Julian was imprisoned for exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq, Afghanistan, and beyond.
I urge the Department of Justice to drop the charges.
The maximum jail sentence of 175 years.
Because he published the truth.
How does it feel to be the father of such a controversial figure to be who's not known around the world?
We'll speak to Julian Assange's father and brother. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Wall Street's largest banks have moved to prop up the ailing San Francisco-based First Republic Bank after the sudden collapse of regional bank Signature and SVB last week sparked fears of a financial meltdown. Bank of America, Citigroup, J.P. Morgan Chase, Wells Fargo will each make $5 billion in uninsured deposits into First Republic, while seven other Wall Street firms will deposit a further $10 billion. The Federal Reserve reports Wall Street firms have received about $300 billion in emergency lending over the past week, roughly half what the Fed loaned banks during the 2008 financial crisis. On Capitol Hill, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen sought to reassure the Senate Finance Committee over the stability of U.S. financial markets.
I can reassure the members of the committee that our banking system is sound and that Americans can feel confident that their deposits will be there when they need them.
Yellen defended the Biden administration's decision to allow all depositors at SVB and Signature to recover their assets after the bank's collapse using money from the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. That's despite the fact that over 93% of assets at SVB and Signature were not insured by the FDIC. Under questioning from senators, Yellen admitted smaller banks that fail might not get the same treatment. The United Nations says there's encouraging momentum in the effort to end the war in Yemen after more than 8 years of conflict. U.S. and Saudi officials said Iran has agreed to stop arming Houthis in Yemen as part of the recent China broker deal to restore diplomatic ties between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Here in the United States, Senators Chris Murphy and Mike Lee introduced a bipartisan resolution this week that would require the U.S. to report on Saudi human rights abuses with the goal of ending U.S. arms sales to the kingdom. The humanitarian catastrophe in Yemen has left over 17 million people in need of assistance. The Polish president, Andrzej Duda, said Thursday his government will ship four Soviet-era MiG fighter jets to Ukraine, becoming the first nation since Russia's invasion to meet Ukraine's request to deliver warplanes. Following that announcement, Slovakia's government said it would transfer 13 MiG fighters to Ukraine. Finland, the Netherlands, and other NATO members are considering similar transfers. In Geneva, the UN-mandated Independent International Commission of Inquiry on Ukraine said Thursday, Russia's committed wide-ranging war crimes in Ukraine, including possible crimes against humanity. Eric Moos, of the chair of the commission.
The commission has concluded that the Russian authorities have committed numerous violations of international humanitarian law and international human rights law, in addition to a wide range of war crimes, including the war crime of excessive incidental death, injury or damage, willful killings, torture, inhuman treatment, unlawful confinement, rape, as well as unlawful transfer and deportation.
China's foreign minister said Thursday he called his Russian counterpart to urge a diplomatic solution to the Ukraine war, warning the conflict could spiral out of control. The warning came as China announced President Xi Jinping will travel to Moscow early next week to hold talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Australia's agreed to purchase 220 Tomahawk cruise missiles from the United States at a cost of nearly $1 billion. The U.S. State Department approved the sale Thursday, just days after President Biden formally announced plans to sell nuclear-powered submarines to Australia in a bid to counter China's influence in the Indo-Pacific. The Biden administration is threatening to ban TikTok if its Chinese owners refuse to sell their stake in the U.S. version of the hugely popular video sharing app. TikTok has been the target of increasing scrutiny by some lawmakers who say it's a threat to national security and that its owner, Beijing-based ByteDance, could use Americans' personal data. On Thursday, the U.K. became the latest country to announce TikTok would be banned on government devices following similar bans by the U.S., Canada, and the European Union. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed four Palestinians, including a teenager, in a raid on the city of Jenin on Thursday. The deaths bring the number of Palestinians killed by Israeli forces this year alone to at least 83. The Palestinian Authority and Israel are scheduled to hold security talks in Egypt over the weekend, which will include officials from Egypt, Jordan, and the United States. Fresh protests erupted across France Thursday after President Emmanuel Macron bypassed Parliament and invoked executive powers to push through a highly contested law raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Macron took the drastic step after it appeared he might not have the necessary support in the National Assembly. Lawmakers booed and sang the national anthem while holding up protest signs and signaled Macron could soon face a no-confidence vote by opposition parties. Massive protests and prolonged strikes have rocked France over the past 2 months as union leaders vowed to keep up the disruptions. This is a teacher speaking from Thursday's protests in Paris.
It's proof that the president's party is a minority in parliament, but he is also a minority in public opinion. The responsibility is on President Macron. After he refused to have dialogue with the unions, he decided to pass this law by force. This law, which is unfair and unpopular, will result in people working more to get less.
In the United Kingdom, unions representing medical workers, including nurses and paramedics, have agreed to a tentative deal on pay raises that would recover ground lost to inflation. Union leaders hailed the deal as a historic victory, capping months of rolling strikes by thousands of workers at the National Health Service. About 100,000 civil servants and others, including junior doctors at NHS, remain in a long-running dispute over pay, pension, and job security. Meanwhile, the UK government says it's agreed to intensive talks on teacher pay and classroom sizes, with an estimated 200,000 teachers in England and Wales who hit picket lines this week for a three-day strike action. Teachers were among tens of thousands of people who marched to the streets of London Wednesday.
I can't sit back and watch education decimated. It's not just about teacher pay. We're talking about funding for schools. Our children deserve so much better than this. They are our future.
In Greece, riot police deployed tear gas and sound grenades against protesters Thursday as workers held a general strike amidst ongoing anger over last month's rail disaster that killed 57 people. The strike grounded flights, halted public transport, kept ferries docked, canceled classes, and left public hospitals running with emergency staff. Rail workers say government neglect and privatization led to the decay of the train system. Back in the United States, in East Palestine, Ohio, newly released data shows soil around the site of February's Norfolk Southern train derailment contains levels of dioxin hundreds of times higher than what's considered safe. That's according to The Guardian, which had the data reviewed by former EPA officials and other chemical experts who said dioxins found in East Palestine were extremely concerning, even if they're below the federal cleanup threshold. The findings also contradicted assertions by the EPA, which told Congress last week, dioxin levels were very low. In 2010, when the EPA found dioxin poses cancer risks, the agency tried to have those limits lowered, but the Obama administration kept the higher threshold in place. In related news, two trains operated by BNSF derailed in Arizona and Washington State Thursday. In Washington, cleanup teams were deployed after some 5,000 gallons of fuel leaked into the Skokomish Tribal Reservation. North Dakota's Supreme Court ruled Thursday the state's abortion ban should remain on hold while a lawsuit over its constitutionality is resolved. North Dakota's anti-abortion trigger law was supposed to take effect once Roe v. Wade was overturned, but a lower court temporarily blocked it last summer, arguing abortion rights are protected by the state constitution. The legislation makes it a felony to perform an abortion with limited exceptions in cases of rape, incest, or medical emergency. And the Los Angeles Times announced Thursday it will no longer use the word internment to describe the mass imprisonment of over 120,000 people of Japanese ancestry during World War II. It will instead use terms like incarceration, imprisonment, or detention. It's the latest step taken by the paper to rectify the harm it caused during the war when it called for the incarceration of Japanese and Japanese Americans. The LA Times issued a formal editorial apology 6 years ago. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy and Peace Report. I'm democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue our coverage of the 20th anniversary of the U.S. invasion of Iraq, by looking at the imprisonment of WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, who's been jailed for exposing U.S. war crimes in Iraq, Afghanistan, and beyond. Julian has spent nearly 4 years locked up in the U.K.'s notorious Belmarsh prison, often called Britain's Guantanamo. He's been held there as the U.S. government seeks his extradition to face espionage and other charges. If extradited and convicted in the U.S., Julian faces 175 years in a maximum security prison. In 2010, WikiLeaks gained international attention after publishing a trove of classified documents leaked by former U.S. Army soldier Chelsea Manning. Included were numerous accounts of war crimes in Iraq. One video released by WikiLeaks showed a U.S. helicopter gunship in Baghdad slaughtering a dozen civilians, including two Reuters staff. Reuters journalist, the up-and-coming photographer, videographer, 22-year-old Namir Nur Eldin, and his driver, Saeed Shema, father of four. WikiLeaks titled the video Collateral Murder. This is an excerpt.
Let me know when you get it. What you? Light them all up.
Cruiser, two traffic, 260s.
Come on, fire.
Julian Assange appeared on Democracy Now! In April 2010, a day after WikiLeaks published the collateral murder video.
When we first got it, we were told that it was important and that it showed the killing of journalists, but we didn't have any other context. And we spent quite some months after breaking the decryption looking closely into this, and the more we looked, the more disturbing it became. This is a sequence which has a lot of detail, and I think in some ways covers most of the bad aspects of the aerial war in Iraq and what we must be able to infer is going on in Afghanistan. These are not bad apples. This is standard practice. You can hear it from the tones of the voices of the pilots that this is, in fact, another day at the office. These pilots have evidently, and gunners have evidently, become so corrupted, morally corrupted by the war, that they are looking for excuses to kill.
So that's Julian Assange sitting in a Washington, D.C. studio right after he released the what they called collateral murder video. I later interviewed Julian in 2014 about WikiLeaks releasing the Iraq war logs. At the time, he was living inside the Ecuadorian embassy where he'd sought political asylum. We sat together there.
Iraq war logs, which were published in October 2010, which in some ways has been one of our best analytical works. We work together with not just other media organizations, but a number of statistical organizations to work out what the kill count was for Iraq, combining with other figures, and we ended up with more than 100,000 civilian casualties. In fact, 15,000 new, completely undocumented civilian kills, and documenting U.S. involvement and approval of Iraqi torture centers within the police, and many killings of civilians at checkpoints and some political issues and so on. And that produced a number of inquiries and has fed into cases that have been taken by Iraqis that has now ended up with an ICC filing, an International Criminal Court filing, against the British military.
So that was one of several interviews I did with Julian Assange inside the Ecuadorian embassy in London when we traveled to interview him there. That was in 2014. Well, in a moment, we'll be joined by Julian's father, John Shipton, and his brother, Gabriel Shipton. They're here in the U.S. for the opening of a new documentary about John Shipton's struggle to free his son. It's titled Ithaca. This is the film's trailer.
Julian Assange is the hero of our time.
He was the darling of the left.
All of a sudden, he's a puppet of Russia.
My name is John Shipton. I'm Julian Assange's father.
WikiLeaks found that Julian Assange has been arrested.
One of the most notorious and controversial figures in custody.
Assange will remain behind bars until that extradition hearing, which has been set down for the end of February.
The maximum jail sentence of 175 years.
Because he published the truth.
How does it feel to be the father of such a controversial figure who's not known around the world?
Was that him on the phone before?
Yeah.
What are you talking about on a kind of regular basis?
If Julian is extradited to the United States to face these charges, he will be the first, but not the last.
What are your worst fears?
That it just collapses under the strain.
It looks as though what journalists do for a living is seen to be a criminal act.
Shipton, keep it up, man.
Thank you.
I'm sharing your energy, I really do.
I've done.
That was the trailer for the new film Ithaca, produced by Julian Assange's brother, the filmmaker Gabriel Shipton, who joins us in Washington, D.C., along with their father, John Shipton. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Gabriel, let's begin with you. Talk about just the name of this film, Ithaca.
Well, it's named after a poem by C.P. Cavafee, and it's a poem that John would listen to while we are, traveling around the world advocating for Julian. And it's sort of a really grounding, inspiring poem that talks about the journey and not the destination. And really, we chose the title because it's really about, when you're fighting for a cause bigger than yourself or for an unachievable or seemingly unachievable goal, you have to live every day or, just put one foot in front of the other. And that's what really Ithaca is about. It's about the friends you make along the way, the lessons you learn, the things you see that keep you going every day in this fight to free Julian Assange.
And Gabriel, I mean, you were a filmmaker already, and then this hits your family. Can you give us the latest, what this hitting your family is? What has happened to Julian and the latest state of affairs? He's been now at the Belmarsh prison for 4 years.
That's right. So it's coming, April 11th will be the 4 years in Belmarsh maximum security prison. He has one final appeal, application to appeal in with the High Court in the UK. He actually, all the papers and all the documents were submitted 5 months ago, and the High Court is still deliberating on whether to hear this appeal or not. So this is just further evidence that it's this thin veil, this thin legal veil that is hanging in front of Julian's persecution. He remains in a maximum security prison. He's not convicted of any crime. He's held there solely at the request of the US DOJ. The prison has 800 inmates, 20% of whom are convicted murderers. Julian shares a cell block with these people. He spends most of his days isolated in his cell. It really is a dire situation for Julian. And I really just have to compel people that, you know, we have to act to free him now.
I want to turn to a clip from Ithaca, where our guest John Shipton, Julian's dad, talks about visiting him at the Belmarsh prison for the first time.
Can we talk about the day Julian asked you to help? Can you talk me through that?
I don't really remember. What I remember is that he got arrested, and so I came here and went and saw him in the... saw Julian in the jail. Anyway, he was in a very bad way.
Yeah, just tell me, how was Julian's
aunt? He's lost about 10 kilos weight, and he's psychologically under a lot of stress and pressure. The visiting hours are very, very precious. Sorry, I'm a bit upset. Yes, my first sister, yes.
Were you able to give him a hug?
Yes, that, yeah.
How was that?
That's pretty moving, as you would expect. Pretty tough for him. Yes, that will do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So I said, I'll be back. I won't stop coming until you can come home.
So that's John Shipton just outside of Belmarsh after seeing Julian inside for the first time. John Shipton joining us from Washington, D.C., just before he heads up here to New York with Gabriel for the film showings in various theaters around the U.S. We'll be there tonight. I'll be doing the Q&A with John and Gabriel. John, talk about that moment, seeing your son, what this means to you, and having a film about your decision to travel the world to garner support for Julian Assange.
Good morning, Penny. Well, you know, it's a bit heartrending. When I went in and saw Julian, he was a bit, you know, wobbly. He just was still in what the prisoners call the hell wing, which the prison governor calls the health wing. It's a pod within the prison where the prison isolates those that it considers ill. Julian was considered so depressed that he had to be watched 24 hours a day to prevent any self-harm. And he had lost a lot of weight. Usually, you know, Julian is a very strong-minded man. He never asks me for anything, but he, at that stage, just asked, could I come and give a hand? Could I come and work at, you know, getting him free from those circumstances? And that was about 3.5 years ago. Yeah, so that's the circumstances. Actually, 4 years in April. Since then, we've built a worldwide movement. Every single parliament in the Western Theatre has a cross-party Assange group. The United Nations have involved themselves. The Council of Europe have involved themselves. And every single major civic organization in the United States, ACLU, Asylum, Human Rights Watch, 27 of them in all, have involved themselves in the five great newspaper outlets that partnered with Julian in the release of the Iraq war files, the cables, and the Afghanistan war files. They have written a letter to Merrick Garland, asking that the charges be dropped. Of course, the publishers have written this letter. As Julian is a publisher, all publishers realize that this prosecution has brought a chill to the capacity to analyze policy and a capacity to print that analysis, so thereby to inform the public.
newspapers that have called for his release, New York Times, The Guardian, El País, Der Spiegel. But I'd like to go back to a 2010 Meet the Press interview with then Vice President Joe Biden. ABC host at the time, David Gregory, questioned Biden about Assange.
Should the United States do something to stop Mr. Assange?
We're looking at that right now. The Justice Department is taking a look at that, and I'm not going to comment on that process.
You think he's a criminal?
If he conspired to get these classified documents with a member of the U.S. military, that's fundamentally different than if somebody drops on your lap, here, David, you're a press person, here is classified material.
Mitch McConnell says he's a high-tech terrorist. Others say this is akin to the Pentagon Papers. Where do you come
from? I would argue that it's closer to being a high-tech terrorist.
A high-tech terrorist, Gabriel Shipton. That's now President Biden. He said that as Vice President on NBC Meet the Press. That seems to be a comment across the political spectrum, from Biden to the former director of the CIA, Pompeo, who could be running for president. Your response and what sense you're getting from inside the Biden administration right now on this extradition request?
Well, this was, you know, an extradition prosecution that was pushed by, as you say, Mike Pompeo and the Trump administration. And now, under the Biden administration, it continues on. So, you know, the Biden administration is owning this this prosecution at the moment, and they're continuing pushing forward with it. The National Security DOJ, you know, is fighting Julian's application to appeal, and so we see that they're pushing forward with this prosecution. What we are seeing, though, and what John was talking about, is this worldwide movement for freedom of expression that has grown up around the fight to free Julian, and that is now coming into the Congress in the United States. Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib has a Dear Colleagues letter that's coming from the Progressive Caucus. We know there are four other Congress people signed on from the Progressive Caucus. So we're really seeing some movement in Congress from the Democratic side, as well as Republicans like Thomas Massey, who have been long-time supporters of Julian. So we are hopeful that this sort of pressure will help the Justice Department, help Merrick Garland really have a look at this Trump-era prosecution that criminalizes what journalists should be doing every day, publishing without fear or favor. They need to have another look at it and really come to the conclusion that the New York Times has, that the ACLU has, that this is a threat to press freedom and the First Amendment.
And finally, John Shipton, you're Julian's dad. Does he and Belmarsh hold out hope?
Sorry, I missed the question.
Do you hold out hope for
his
freedom?
Yes, most certainly. I use the word faith, you know, every second, every minute devoted to continuing. It benefits, first of all, Julian, and secondly, our family, thirdly, all of those people who believe in the great artifact of the United States Constitution, the First Amendment, whereby we can freely read, freely comment, and as a consequence of that, build an understanding of government policy or cultural or social movements. It's just absolutely vital. And it was first discovered or first announced by Goodall, who was the first announced by Goodall as a global problem. Goodall was the attorney who fought on behalf of the New York Times back in the Pentagon Papers day. Also, I would add that the support of life of Daniel Ellsberg has been, you know, stalwart over the last 14 years. And he, last time we was here, he invited us into his house. And it's with considerable sadness that Gabrielle and I received a note from Daniel the other day that he would be leaving us soon.
Meaning he's announced that he has pancreatic cancer, and doctors have said he has months to live. John Shipp.